Hey y'all, it's Eric, and this is For Colored Nerds, the weekly show where we peel back the layers of Black culture that we rarely discuss in mixed company. This week, Brittany and I chatted with Gabrielle Horton and Martina Abrams-Ilunga, the hosts of Natal, a podcast about having a baby while Black. Natal dropped its second season on February 10th, and it follows the stories of Black families in rural Mississippi, Iowa, and Hawaii. It also has interludes from midwives, birth workers, and medical professionals who are all on the front lines of Black birthing health. Brittany and I were so taken by how generous the families were with their stories and how paramount reproductive justice is to ensuring the safety and care of future generations. Trust me, y'all, you want to join us as we get into Natal's mission, what it means to capture these stories from families navigating the pandemic, reproductive education, and seriously, so much more. It is all here. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back with all of that and more right after this quick break.
Gabrielle, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
And Martina, so happy to have you here today. Thank you so much.
I'm thrilled to be here. Thank you so much.
So Natal is often described as a podcast about having a baby while Black in the United States. And it fulfills such a crucial need in health reporting for Black pregnant people and their families. But I want to know, what prompted you both to create this show?
Yeah, that's something we get a lot, especially because Martina and I don't have kids and we've never given birth. So this is something that we've spent a lot of time thinking about. But honestly, back in 2020, you know, I think we were starting to see more news headlines. I think all of us were, you know, we saw Beyonce's 2019 Vogue cover shoot. We were also hearing from folks like Serena Williams and Olympic gold medalist Allyson Felix about these really challenging experiences they were having during childbirth, things that we hear often now about sort of just patient negligence, not listening to or caring for what folks have to say, the pain they're in. And sometimes these situations have ended fatally. And I think we were all taking in more and more of this. And then it hit home for me that summer in 2019. And it was a childhood best friend of mine. She had preeclampsia and had to be, you know, have an emergency delivery, and baby was born 2 months early. And so just kind of connecting the dots between what I was reading in the news and seeing on social media, and then having someone close to me have those very same experiences of not being listened to and could have really ended really badly. And it was something I took to Twitter too, I guess, like us, most of us millennials do. And, you know, just kind of like fired off a tweet, put my phone down, checked it the next morning and saw that it had went viral. Folks were sharing all their experiences with nurses, with doctors and hospitals, knowing folks and family members. And Martina also responded, saying she also had an interest in finding a way to tell these stories. And that's kind of how we kind of got started. And I'll let, I guess, Martina share also her perspective leading up to that moment.
Yeah. So for me, I remember there was a New York Times article, I think in 2018, about a Black woman. I think she was 36 years old. She had worked for the CDC in Atlanta, and she had passed away shortly after giving birth to her child. And that story just like struck me in my gut. And I shared it with my mom, and, you know, we started talking about her birthing experiences with me and my siblings, and just hearing different stories of folks in my family and realizing how close these issues were to me in my own family. So when I saw Gabrielle's tweet, at this point, I was like super interested and like ready to start telling stories. So from there, we just started meeting, and we decided that we were going to create a new podcast project. And this was in, I think, Gabrielle, you had said 2020, but this was actually the summer of 2019.
Yeah, God, it has been a while.
Yeah, so it was before the pandemic. And then it just went from there. And we reached out to the Black Mamas Matter Alliance. We had started doing research on what organizations are doing work in this area. We were trying to get up to speed ourselves and just kind of understanding this new world that we hadn't been a part of as parents or even as journalists and storytellers ourselves. And so we connected with Black Mamas Matter Alliance, and that was kind of our first partnership and introduction. And they were really foundational in helping us to think about how we started to tell these stories and really giving us access to their network and different folks that have ended up appearing on our show and being a part of our community.
And now Natal is in his second season, or just wrapped its second season.
Yeah.
So much of the like reporting about like Black birthing parents kind of like that experience focuses on like the possible kind of like dangers of giving birth as a Black person in this country.
Yeah.
And, you know, Natal does like cover that aspect really well, but it also places you very much in the minds of parents, like, you know, during this like really monumentally like vulnerable time.
Yeah.
And it feels like we get the stories and the actual experiences kind of behind those statistics. Like, why did you take such a narrative approach? And I'm curious, like, just talk to us a bit about how you capture those stories.
That's a great one. It's something we obviously spend a lot of time thinking about, as Martina mentioned. We're storytellers by trade. Like, this is what we do. So we always knew that we wanted to approach this series with a balance. And at first, we weren't sure what that balance would look like. We weren't sure if it'd be 50-50, 60-40, 70-30. But we knew that we were going to definitely have to do the reporting side of it, right, with sort of the data, the science, the research to really contextualize what's happening across maternal health, reproductive health care and access in the country. But we also knew that there were stories behind these numbers, that people had these beautiful moments. They had these sort of small, what they thought were minor moments that really all kind of played a part in what this experience meant and felt like to them and their families, right? Folks aren't just these numbers. And so it really mattered a lot to us. You know, the first season, each episode covered one to two parents, and you got to learn about them as people. But we did an even deeper dive this season. As you know, we've got fewer parents. We've got three families. And so you really get to know them, because people are not making decisions out the blue. People are making decisions based on the context in which they were raised, they were taught, where they live. And so we think a lot about place. We think a lot about what childhood was like for them and how they started to learn about their body, how they were sort of taught to sort of advocate for their needs, interacting with medical systems. And I think it's something all of us can actually relate to, even if you haven't given birth. When Anasia was about 10 years old, she learned a new lesson about how the body works. Instead of her mom sitting her down for the birds and bees conversation, her mom's stash of adult videos became her new teacher.
It was the middle of the night, and I woke up, and I was about to go to their room and ask a question about something, and the door was cracked. And so I looked, because the door was cracked and the TV was on, and it sounded really weird. So I was like, what? So I like peek. My dad's snoring like really, really loud. And I look on the TV, and she's like watching porn on the TV. And so I'm like, whoa, what is that? Like, and I didn't say it out loud. I just kind of leaned on the wall and was like watching it. So naturally, the next day when she was gone, I went to go find the tape.
Martina, do you kind of want to share a little bit about the process, but like how we get them and how we think about it?
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, for us, there are a few things that were really important to get across. It's like, first, yes, there are a lot of disparities, very real disparities, very real tragic outcomes when it comes to Black birthing in this country. But that's not every case, right? There is a lot of joyful births. People have some really beautiful experiences. And even when one pregnancy or one birthing experience, it can be like a whole number of events and occurrences that happen. And we wanted to really capture the totality of all of that, the good, the bad, the joyful, all of that, the way that people's families show up for them, the way that people's partners show up for them, the way that they're transformed. We didn't want this to be a show that's about all the bad things that can happen to a Black person that is pregnant or having or giving birth. And so another thing that we were really intentional about thinking is, we know that Black people, we come in all different shapes, sizes, forms. We come from all different kinds of backgrounds. And so we wanted to represent as many different kinds of Black people and as many different kinds of Black experiences as birthing, pregnant and birthing folks as we could. And so season one, we had 9 different parents, and they, you know, cover all different kinds of backgrounds, all different kinds of circumstances, all different kinds of identities. For season 2, we're thinking about, okay, what are some stories that we haven't yet told? And in season 1, we actually hadn't spoken to any families that were giving birth in rural areas. And as we were doing research on looking at data, looking at policy, we knew that folks who live in more remote areas face a whole other set of challenges when it comes to bringing babies into this world and growing their families. Things like hospital closures and access to care and having to drive, you know, upwards of 2 hours to the nearest hospital to access an OBGYN, and not having access to great reproductive care, or thinking about family planning. But we also knew through some of our research and talking to folks on the ground that there are so many solutions that are coming out of rural areas. Like, babies are being born. Like, no matter where you are, whether you're in a city or in the middle of nowhere, there's babies are being born. And so people are finding ways to show up for each other, to care for birthing people, to care for these families. And we wanted to hone in on that and capture all of that beauty. And so the way that we think about finding folks is we have a few different ways we do it. We do an open call for stories, mm-hmm. where we use the different partners and relationships that we've made with birth workers, with advocates, with providers, and we ask them, you know, to share this call for stories, mm-hmm. Folks who are interested in being open and being a part of this process with us. And then we also just rely on relationships and introductions that people make for us. So for season two, our anchor family, our anchor set of parents, their names are Shayla and Eric Brown. Mm-hmm. They're based in rural Mississippi. They came through our call for stories. I think they're our first submission. And then the other two parents that we featured this season, Ciara Hunter in Hilo, Hawaii, and Anasia Sturdivant, who at the time was in Ames, Iowa, they came through introductions. We had actually met their birth workers and folks who had like worked with them through some of their births mm-hmm. previously. And they were like, oh, you should meet my client. You know, they might be a great person for this season. And so we had calls with them and we fell in love with them too.
I'm glad you brought up some about the process of finding these families that you work with. Cause I mean, the stories that these families share, they can be heavy. Sometimes they're recalling traumatic memories or experiences. And I imagine that in those cases, like, those are not the memories that they're sharing with a lot of other people. Why do you think the people that you spoke to were so generous in sharing these really intimate, sometimes difficult experiences with you?
I think at the core, it has to start with the intentions. And so I think mm-hmm. that we've been really clear about our intentions in this space and the storytelling mm-hmm. space. Because, you know, keep in mind, there are other shows and series led by Black birth workers and parents and families. But, you know, we understand that we fill a particular gap, one that kind of blends mm-hmm. the reporting and the storytelling, and valuing that storytelling above all, honestly, because we think of that mm-hmm. as a major data point. What the families that we get to work with have to say, that means just mm-hmm. as much to us as sort of like the latest peer-reviewed journal, you know, data mm-hmm. coming out of that. And so mm-hmm. I think that in all of our language and our outreach, whether it's with partners or families, providers or birth workers, we're always really clear. And I think folks, that gives folks a sense of trust. You know what I mean? They can really trust us to be honest and direct. And I think in all of our actions, especially as we work with potential parent storytellers and throughout the production process, we care a lot. You know, we want to do those follow-up questions and calls to make sure we got that part of your story right. We want to give you space during the interview if you find yourself getting emotional, right? We also have sort of put in place where we're able to connect all of our parent storytellers to licensed mental health professionals who can work with them for free care sessions. So that's something that our partner, Black Mamas Matter Alliance, really wanted us to think about. Like, how can we support these stories without just solely extracting this, you know, these vulnerable moments, right? These stories from folks without really giving anything back. And so we think a lot about how we can care for the families that we work with and even care for the other voices that you hear on the show. And so I think people just feel that, you know what I mean? I think people can pick up on that. And then just like, let's be honest, like there's not a whole lot of places where talking about Black pregnancy experiences, Black birth are like always mainstream. Like folks are always sort of going to want to hear and even share stories that we don't get a chance to see all the time. Or if we do, it's always told in a really negative, very like, oh, you know, very morbid kind of sort of tone. And we can create spaces to celebrate these experiences, to celebrate folks making decisions for themselves and their families. And I think folks are just hungry for more of that kind of content, more of those kind of spaces.
One of the couples that had quite a journey moving around, and also just one of the most interesting stories on the show to me, it really resonated a lot, was of the Black couple you mentioned earlier, Shayla and Eric Brown, who moved mm-hmm. from Arizona back to rural Mississippi to birth, for now, the last of their children and to raise their older kids just in an environment that's more comfortable for them.
I feel safer, honestly, raising my Black boys in a rural area than I did when I was in a city, because it's harder to move around with that many kids. by yourself. And then there are just always people making, there's a lot more non-Black people, first of all, around. And they're always making really odd and strange comments that just don't make you feel safe with your children. They walk up to them and touch them. Like, it happened a lot in Arizona. And then kids would just come up missing all the time. So that was extremely scary.
And their story was so interesting to me. It dealt with the pandemic, reverse migration back to the South, and also pregnancy loss. Why was it so important to include a story like theirs on the show?
Thinking about what we were sort of talking about earlier, how we think a lot about trying to balance that data and the storytelling. Well, we knew that we were going rural. And so the majority of Black rural folks in this country, they live in the Southeast, right? Really thinking about sort of the Black Belt region. And so we knew that thinking about how do we sort of decide on storytellers, we knew for sure, without a doubt, we had to have somebody who represented sort of like the Black Belt region, right? To represent it, especially in that Southeastern corner. And so that was something that was not really negotiable for us. And it just so happened to be that Shayla Brown reached out to us. And as you said, a very compelling story, and obviously one that we got to know over many months, almost, I guess, close to a year, really, at this point. Wow. And so we knew that there were certain sort of data points that we wanted to be reflected in the stories. And there just happened to sort of capture a lot of them. We always want to make sure that we're focusing on families who have birth experiences outside of hospitals, outside of traditional sort of care systems, or how we think of traditional, right? Because, like, if you think about midwifery care and doula care, those are really the OG traditional sort of ways that folks are being cared for. And so we have all those little things that we want different parents to be able to capture. But with that family, it was really powerful us to also hear from a partner. We've had other sort of parents on who talked about maybe their husband or their wife or, you know, their long-term partner, but we never have those voices included in season one. So season two, we wanted to really play with this, to really hear from that kind of partner perspective, what is it like to care for, right? Because it's not just This sort of pregnancy is not happening to one single person. It never is, regardless of the outcome, whether it's abortion or pregnancy loss or a childbirth, right? And so we wanted to hear that partner perspective. And as you know, Eric Brown is very hands-on. He almost is sort of stands in as, you know, providing that midwifery care for his wife during this fifth pregnancy.
Over the coming months, Eric learned firsthand how to provide prenatal care to his wife.
We did blood pressure checks. We did measurements, readjusting the baby. We did when you had, you know, other symptoms, maybe she had like sinus problems or whatever, like trying to deal with those and get a remedy for that. And just, like I said, trying to be on call as much as possible, because there were plenty of times I didn't know what to do, or she, you know, I mean, I'm not Superman. Like, there were plenty of times I didn't completely know what to do, but show up, like show up and say, like, not know what to do with her.
That was really important. And, you know, they were just very generous with their time and their stories. And that is always something we look for in the folks that we work with. Everyone might not be ready or comfortable to dive in and be open and honest. But when you are, oh, it makes for some wonderful storytelling that I think really resonates with folks. And for them, it was very cathartic to be able to just process all of this, you know, having, I think, so many young kids, you know, kind of back to back, something that they wanted and something that they shared a lot about, you know, that thought process. I think it was helpful for them, and we talk to them still to this day, to be able to just get all that out. You know what I mean? To just be able to share all those feelings and moments that they may have just been kind of too busy to really stop to reflect. And there were moments you can hear in the tape where they're talking to each other, giving compliments. And it'll be like, that's the first time they had really had that moment. So it was important for us to capture that. And, you know, their partnership, the family, everything wasn't perfect. And I think we just like to be as real with people as possible. Like, a lot of folks can relate to that. Like, losing a job during the pandemic, like, that's majority of the country. You know what I mean? Like, so they have really big themes that were even beyond pregnancy that we were just like, man, we got to make sure folks hear their story, you know?
Yeah. And I think on top of that, what also I think resonated with us was how purposeful birthing is for them. The way that they give birth, and they do everything with intention, from the way that they have babies, the way that they raise their sons, you know, the way they choose where to live. And when we think about so much of the season is about taking control over your destiny, right? Doing things on your own terms. And they were just such a great example of that. And I think personally, they're very inspiring. And I felt like they could inspire so many other people. I think we're at this time now where a lot of folks are thinking about how they live their lives, you know, what's important to them, where they work, where they live, how they work, how they live. And I think seeing not only the Browns, all the other parents in this series as well, but especially the Browns were just great examples of how you can take, reclaim your agency, do things on your own term, make decisions that are best for you and not best for everyone else. So that was something we were really excited to be able to, you know, put a spotlight on.
After the break, we get into how NATAL evolved into an essential resource for expecting parents, the ways we need to expand our ideas of reproductive justice, and I've got a surprise announcement. What could that be in an episode about birth? You will have to find out what it is after the break. Welcome back, y'all. All right, so before the break, Gabrielle and Martina talked to us about one of our favorite families in the series, Shayla and Eric Brown, and how they've taken their birthing story into their own hands. Now we'll get into how NATAL has reflected a bit of my own experience and the education it provides for expecting parents. All right, let's jump back into the interview. Gabrielle, I'm so excited that you mentioned like the importance of having the partner's voice in there. Mm-hmm. Like as someone, you know, who's gone through that experience, like it was awesome being able to kind of hear that reflected. To be straight up, it's not a thing I expect. Yeah. It's a thing I'm pretty used to kind of not being there. So it was such a kind of awesome respite. And then also to hear, you know, a partner who was so involved, you know, who was like doing the work. And really, like, hell, yeah, me, I'm like, how do I anticipate some needs? to that end, like, something I haven't actually shared on the show is that my partner, my wife, is pregnant right now. We are expecting. Congrats. Yeah, thank you. We're expecting our daughter in late June. And, you know, I've been rereading the books and, you know, kind of doing the things. And one of the, just real quick, one of the books I've always appreciated is, you know, and it's a complicated one, but is Ina Mae Gaskin's Guide to Childbirth. And, you know, I love it because of the stories that I think kind of come before the education. Some of the births are rocky, some are smooth.
Right.
You know, and the book is old. And it's about a commune, you know, basically in Middle Tennessee. So I'm not expecting like a ton of Black stories. But, you know, I think even on my second read, I'm still shocked by like how even in the pictures, there's not a ton of women of color. And even in the stories, a lot of them aren't necessarily coded as women of color or Black women. And so, like, you know, this book is always heralded. And I get it, you know, and I like it. But, like, I struggle with it and how many of the, like, most popular tools that are supposed to be available to us leave us out, you know, kind of in this way. So, like, NATAL, really listening to it, like, felt like such a nice comfort because it actually, again, provides stories and the education. And I guess, like, what does it mean to you to be, like, reflecting our stories back to us in this way? Like, what do you see as, like, the true kind of power of hearing this or hearing these experiences?
One of the things that we say at NATAL is, you know, our parents are the experts of their stories and the experts of their bodies. When we think about as Black folks who navigate in our medical system, I think so many people have experiences where they walk into a doctor's office and you're telling them what hurts or what happened and you are talked down to or you're dismissed and what you have to share is ignored. And so for us, it's this repositioning of Black folks as an expert. You know, we our credibility is always undermined even when we're talking about our own body. So I think that's one of the really important parts of the work that we do. And I think also it's, you know, reminding folks like these books and these tools and these resources, like where do you think these white people learned the things that they learned? And so it's also putting Black folks in the front as well as like everything that we know in this country about birthing came from African midwives that came from the continent. And this is our knowledge. This is our tradition. This is our history. These are our ancestors. And so even reclaiming that, I think, by putting Black voices at the center and making them the experts that they rightfully are is just kind of correcting history in a way.
Yeah. And it's reminding us of our power. Mm. And I say us because we're a part of that, right? And, you know, for this season, we talk about sort of reproductive care at large, right? And so we're thinking about all kinds of sort of outcomes with pregnancy. And that means that even more folks can really relate to what we're talking about, right? And so it's reminding us of our power. We are the originals. Like, we started this. You know what I mean? Like Martina said, like, those granny midwives, not just birthing Black babies, they're her birthing, taking care of, in many cases, nursing white families too, right? And so we see what that legacy's been twisted and then like commodified and sold back to us and then not even like include our name or face. Like, it's wild. Mm-hmm. And so thinking too, like, not even solely dwelling on the sort of the white supremacy of it all, but thinking really about how, you know, Black birth workers and providers like are existing and supporting and caring for families, and families are still have, you know, creating families and still doing all these things in spite of. And I think it's just a reminder of like how powerful we are and what it looks like to really have agency over your body and your life. And yes. So I think it's our like immense sort of like honor and joy to be able to reflect Black stories and tell them, because that's all that we do. And so it's we're just really thankful to be able to do it, but it's a reminder of how powerful we are. And we hear that people, you know, when they reach back out to us, mm-hmm. they just feel like, okay, now I know what to ask, or I know how to have this mm-hmm. conversation, or I know what to look for. And like that's powerful, right? Mm-hmm. To be able to sort of know more than what you did before maybe that episode or before you sort of tapped into one of our IG live conversations. And so we do hope that we're able to share the information and knowledge mm-hmm. and allow folks to do what they want with it, but not take it away or keep it away, because like Martina said, like, this is ours, and it has always been and will always be. And so just reminding folks of that and reminding ourselves, too, even as a team.
Yeah.
I'm glad you brought up the point of reproductive justice and just reproductive health in general, because I think that this show is just such a great example of how expansive the idea of reproductive health and reproductive justice, how expansive those ideas really are, but also how Black women have always been vanguards in that space. As, you know, birth workers and doulas and, you know, granny midwives, as you mentioned, but also like on a civil rights front. Even hell, even the actual term reproductive justice was coined by a Black woman. mm-hmm. I really loved the episode that you did this season about Fannie Lou Hamer, a civil rights mm-hmm. figure who is lesser known as a reproductive justice figure, who had personal experience with dealing with the downside of, you know, living as a Black woman in a society that doesn't value mm-hmm. reproductive health for us. Mm-hmm. Why was it important to connect Fannie's legacy and her life experience to the stories mm-hmm. of this season?
That episode is one of my favorites this season. And everything that we try to do, we're always trying to paint a picture of where we are, but also how we got here. So Shayla had received care in Mound Bayou, Mississippi, at a clinic where the former Taborian Hospital had once stood. And Taborian Hospital was actually one of the first, you know, all-Black hospitals in the South and in the state of Mississippi. And it's also where Fannie Lou Hamer had received care and where she actually took her last breaths. On March 14th, 1977, Fannie Lou Hamer took her last breaths at Taborian. She died from breast cancer and high blood pressure complications. And then, in 1983, Taborian Hospital, the heartbeat of Mound Bayou, closed for good. Decades later, when Shayla and Eric Brown headed to Mound Bayou, the illustrious hospital of Fannie Lou Hamer's time wasn't there. By 2013, there was at least a clinic, but nothing comparable to Taborian. And so with Fannie Lou Hamer, the connection to Shayla and Eric and Mound Bayou, Mississippi, and, you know, the first Black-founded town and, you know, one of the first Black-run and founded hospitals was just a reminder that none of this is new. Like, this fight on behalf of Black folks is not new. The issues that we're facing today are not new, and that so much of the activism that we see today is really just built upon this very long history and this very long legacy. And I think for our team, you know, we're also just a bunch of history nerds. So for us, it was just really fun to kind of uncover this history because it wasn't something that we intentionally sought out. It was in our very long conversation with Eric and Shayla, and we're asking, you know, where did you get care here? What are the names of some of the facilities that you received care? And Shayla mentions Mound Bayou, and Gabrielle went and, you know, started Googling and kind of uncovered this whole connection. But for us, it was also just really fun to learn more about someone that we knew, at least me personally. I knew Fannie Lou Hamer, but I didn't know her story as well as I do now. And so I think for folks who are, we're always trying to reach folks at like where they are and at different intersections and bring people into this conversation. And so we felt like this story is one where, you know, just the history nerds, like, here's another way for you to enter this conversation and to learn more about this topic and to become more engaged and more informed and have a new way of thinking about reproductive justice and as it might relate to other fields and other kinds of work.
And I think it was also like important to put reproductive justice and the fight for control over our bodies into like a larger context for like civil and human rights as well. Because I think it's so easy to kind of put birth stories as like, oh, that's a women's thing or that's like a cishet women's thing. And I think with all the work that we do, from how we choose parent storytellers to the topics that we cover to the expansiveness of the very topics, it's always sort of thinking about how to make folks realize like, this affects you too. This affects you too. Like, we are all connected, right? So whether we win or lose, like, we're all going to be affected somehow, even if you still kind of, you know, continue to have access, that access is going to look different, right? And so I think we're always thinking about how do we kind of remind folks like, no, like, this is a part of civil and human rights. You know, we're talking about, you know, Fannie Lou Hamer and her having the Mississippi appendectomy, right? Having her uterus, like having, you know, a hysterectomy without her consent. And that's not like a one-off sort of story.
It makes the storytelling fuller. It makes the listening experience fuller. And, you know, something else I think that also really contributes to that and to sort of continue to pull, to pull on this thread throughout history of, you know, Black women and femmes and non-binary people really leading the charge on reproductive health in this country. On your show, you don't just talk with birthing parents. You also talk with providers and advocates like, you know, the doctors that you had in the first season or, you know, folks like Jasmine Merritt, Charity Moore, Mariah Brown, Nadia Granby, Tori Rodriguez, the founding members of the Alabama Birth Collective, an organization that is a big part of season two.
Right. And so in order for us to make the impact that we need to in this area, because we are original Southern girls from Alabama, these are our people and our aunts and cousins and friends, right?
All right.
Because you cannot do it alone. You cannot make the impact that Black and brown people need alone. And so I would just encourage other birth workers and that are working in rural areas to make sure you connect and have a real sisterhood, because that's a topic that's talked about a lot, but the work that is required to have a real sisterhood, these ladies are here now. Like, I just do friendship differently, okay? Like, I just, you know, I'll be like, oh, no.
Talk to us about why it's so important to have people like birth workers or providers or people that found an organization like the Alabama Birth Collective on the show and what they add to this conversation.
We're always trying to tell as much of a complete picture as we can. And so when we think about the care that Black birthing folks and Black families receive, they're obviously receiving the care, but that care is coming from someone. And so while we do feature providers and birth workers and advocates, almost exclusively we feature Black providers and birth workers and advocates. And I think that's also an important distinction. But in so many ways, the Black folks who care for these families are also at the forefront of the fight for better care, for better outcomes. And so as we're trying to understand the issues and the challenges, we also want to amplify the solutions and the work that's being done. Because so much of the journalism around Black maternal care, Black perinatal care, reproductive justice are just these slew of like disparities and stats with as if there's no one fighting, as if there's no solution, as if there aren't answers. And we're talking to the people that have answers, that are testing new models, that are producing research and scholarship, that are showing new ways of care that work for families. And we want to amplify that so that people who are going through medical school can turn be like, okay, this is how I can be doing this. This is how I should be working. These are people I can partner with. These are resources I can refer my families to, my patients to, people who are in midwifery school or any type of training to become a birth worker themselves. So for us, it's really important to be able to show like the care that we are looking for, the care that folks deserve exists and it's out there. And here are the people who are delivering it. And these are the people that you should be emulating and following and learning from.
Love it.
I would just say like too, because like at the end of the day, the question that we've always asked is, what does care look like for Black birthing families? And that care does not exist in a vacuum or does not sort of lie in one hospital or in one space with one provider. It's like a complex web of people and loved ones and providers and birth workers. And so that's just like us being able to answer that question, we have to talk to the people who are literally doing the work. And we love the Alabama Birth Collective and really had a lot of fun creating those interludes and just sharing with people just like how beautiful birth work is and what it looks like to do it, especially with them. You know, they're in this beautiful sisterhood. So it's just another way for folks to enter the conversation because they kind of just sound like your homegirls. They sound like friends, girlfriends, you know, and so that's another way. If maybe the data is too heavy for you to start with that, the interludes are just a really great way to just bring you on in. And really that Southern hospitality is felt from the moment you press play.
It's also exposing people to different care options. Right. I think people are very familiar with OBGYNs and nurses and folks who work within hospitals and those kind of settings. But there, you know, we get the question all the time, what's a doula? What's a midwife? What's the difference? Why would I use one? What's a lactation consultant? So the educational part of the show is also exposing our audience and people who may not be familiar with this kind of work that there's all these different care options and kinds of people that you can work with along on your journey or even become one yourself if you are thinking of, you know, how you want to serve people in this world. So I think that's an added component there.
So we know that Black maternal health and experiences are undercovered, you know, but even as you all have just outlined, like in the past, like two seasons, you've explored so much, you know, home birth, pregnancy loss, reproductive justice, postpartum depression, unplanned pregnancy, near-death experiences, lack of supportive care for Black women. I could go on. I'm tired, you know, but you guys do so much. I'm curious, like, what is the road ahead for NATO? Like, what are the stories? What are the types of stories that you still kind of hope to tell?
There's so many more stories, if you can believe it. I think there's probably some stories that we may want to go deeper in, you know, like I think like adoption and foster care are super important to us and something we were able to explore this season through our parent storyteller Anasia and also that Louisiana doctor that Martina mentioned earlier, Dr. Tanya Hawkins Hunter. And so there's like topics that we may have brought up but haven't like spent full seasons on or more than one episode that we're always interested in. I think IVF and sort of the kind of fertility treatment experience is something that we hear more about and even kind of were able to sort of explore again this season, just different options folks have for treatment. So I think there's like things like that, that like you would definitely know stories that we want to go deeper on. I'm always curious about more partner stories and not just so much in like the romantic partner kind of vibe either. I'm thinking about like, who was your ace coon boon when you were going through that pregnancy? Because I'm like, you know, like, was it your mama? Was it your best friend? Was it that nurse at the hospital who always looked out for you? So I'm really interested in like more partner stories. And it's also fun. Like, I think like the Shayla and Eric one, it was a fun time recording, you know, with two people who know each other really well, but they're still learning about each other, like literally as you're talking to them. I thought that was a cool thing to bear witness to. And I think something that can be help to kind of just, I don't know, invite more folks into the conversation that who may not necessarily think that a show like Natal or a topic like childbirth or having a baby relates to them. And you can realize that like all of us are navigating, you know, through these decisions and through other folks' experiences and what it looks like on the policy level, too. All of it affects us. And so trying to find fun ways to do that. How about you, yeah. Martina? What are things that you're excited about?
Yeah, everything you said, I would definitely plus one. I think I'm also interested in more intergenerational storytelling on this topic, conversations between elders and our families and their birth mm-hmm. experiences and what we're seeing today. I'm always interested in asking, you know, older folks, what do you envision for the future? Because I don't think they get asked that enough. Yeah. And mm-hmm. so thinking about how can we bring elders into the conversation, I would love to hear from a granny midwife on the show or two.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm just thinking about, yeah, how can we bring in the folks who have been here much longer, that their reproductive years might be behind them, but there's just so much story and experience and knowledge there that is often has been hush-hush that maybe we are able to get from them and learn from.
That's awesome. Thank you all so much. Seriously, like, you've done some awesome work.
Incredible
and
work.
Just even hearing about it, it feels so important and so needed. So thank you for being so generous.
And thank you for sharing with us. Yes, thank you so much.
For Colored Nerds was created by me, Eric Eddings, and Brittany Luce. It's supported by our production team at Stitcher, including producer Alexis Williams and social producer Elise Ellis. Marcus Hom is our engineer and Peter Clowney is head of content. Our theme music is by Willie Green. And look, y'all, we love hearing from our listeners. We love you all so much. Seriously, it feels so good to be back with you. So please connect with us and tell us what you thought of this episode. You can reach us on Twitter and Instagram at For Colored Nerds and never miss an episode by following us on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, or wherever you listen.